Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 28th. I'm Ray Graff, and I don't want to get you too excited. But Rich Guthrie is back to answer your birding questions today. If you have a birding question, call us now. It gets very... Listen, when Guthrie is here, it's like a Beatles concert. You can't get in at the end. So call now, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well with your birding questions. It's voxpop@wamc.org, but the number is 800-348-2551. To be clear, the Beatles are not here, but Rich Guthrie is here. It's almost as good. It's Radio Gold, and it's coming up after the news. Well, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today, and when we do that, we welcome back our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association, a regional reviewer for the premier birding site eBird. If you have a question about birds, always fun to have Rich Guthrie try to answer them. 800-348-2551 is our number, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well at voxpop@wamc.org. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, but the number is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie, how are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Ray. So nice to hear your voice out there.
Great to have you back on the program. And before we get to the calls and the emails and stuff, you sent me an email today, subject heading, "The Birds and the Buds." What gives with, I assume this has nothing to do with the legalization of marijuana. What are you talking about?
Not at all. No. This is just my effort to just get out there and be part of the community by helping folks with their backyard inventory, whether it's the backyard or the back 40, don't matter. But we'll talk about what birds are there, what plants are there, the trees and the flowers, and what we can do to expect more, how we can fix it up a little bit, and some thoughts along those lines. So it's basically a friendly consultation, one-on-one with a little effort on... seeing who's there, making a little checklist, and making a few suggestions for how to make it better.
That is so cool, and that's a great idea. When did you come up with this one?
Actually, I've been harboring that for quite a long time, saying, how can I, you know, because, number one, I like to get out, like to be with folks. I like to see what's around and explore new areas, and this is kind of a way. It's a way of doing that and helping out as well. So there are details. We can get into that. You know, there are some limitations to my time and where I'm at.
Yeah.
And can find out more just by sending me an email to my email address, which is basically my name, RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
Richard,
and we'll talk.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. Great. So it's an inventory of birds and whatever you got growing out in the backyard. It's an interesting idea. I saw one out in the backyard. I was out taking the air, I think, Sunday morning, and it was a little guy, and he was red up top toward the beak, but he was black and white, but he looked like the size of a sparrow or one of those smaller birds, and I've never seen that one before in my backyard. He may have been there all along, but any ideas?
Well, no, you got me. You throw me for a loop there. Black and white with the red on the top of the crown? Is
no,
it?
On the beak.
On the beak.
Yeah, red beak.
Well, give me a few moments. We'll work on that.
All right,
that,
fair enough. While you're doing that, I'll get to the emails here. Rich Guthrie is our guest, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Now, you know, it was very early on a Sunday morning. I may well have been a little bleary-eyed, but I think
maybe the bird was.
Well, that's quite entirely possible. This one is from Richard Guthrie. That was yours. All right, this one is from John.
Hello there.
Hello. Yes. This one's from John in Pittsfield. John says, the other day we had a group of sparrows eating seeds on the ground below our bird feeder. Small bird of prey pounced on one of the sparrows and was able to haul it away. This bird of prey was between the size of a robin and a crow, closer to the size of a robin, It had white breast feathers. I think the wing and back feathers were brown and gray. The legs were long and no feathers. What was it? I don't think it was a Cooper's Hawk because we have those around here, so I know what they look like. And that is from John in Pittsfield.
Well, it sounds like a perfect description of the Sharp Shin Hawk, which is like a Cooper's Hawk, but smaller, roughly the size of a blue jay, or thereabouts. And they do have long, skinny legs, almost pencil-thin legs, that they use, and their main diet is smaller birds.
I'll be darned.
From the description, it sounds like a young one. The adults would be sort of a blue-black back with rusty color on the breast, but the young ones are brown with gray and black patterns on the tail and the like.
All right, Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. And we'll take care of a couple of more emails here, and then we'll hit the phones. This one is from Tim in the 845. He says, I usually take my feeders down in spring, but have a red-winged blackbird at the feeder. They usually aren't feeder birds. This sweet bird had one working leg. The other one had been badly damaged, sort of just dangles. Is it okay that I'm letting him feed at the feeder? He's very sweet. I can listen to that call all day. Also, all right, there's another part of this, but we'll get to that. First, what do you think?
Well, unfortunately, yes. Keep it up. That happens with birds. They run into some conflict along the way. They're very vulnerable. Their bones are very fragile. And many of them can work it out and keep going. I've seen many a bird with hopping along with one useful leg and doing what appears to be just fine. How they got that way is a mystery, and there's all sorts of possibilities, including a successful escape from an encounter with a Cooper's or Sharp Shin Hawk.
Huh.
But on the other hand, as far as the feeder is concerned, sure, you can keep it up, and it'll help that red-winged blackbird, and one of my favorite birds at that. So good job with that. While we're at it, I'd like to mention that the bears are awake now, and anybody with feeders wants to be really, really careful about how they go about their backyard bird feeding.
Yeah.
You really don't like to have bears invited to your yard. So measures to prevent that are a good idea. And there are ways to avoid. One is to not feed, really an option, or feed other food for other birds, like hummingbirds or thistle seed or things like that, that out of reach from the bears, suspended from a higher perch or reach or something along those lines. But bears and backyards don't mix well.
Okay. By the way, the second part of Tim's email, and he's playing right into my hands, frankly, can you impersonate a nuthatch? And that's from Tim.
Well, we have two different kinds of nuthatches, and these are the upside-down birds, the ones that go down the side of the trunk of the tree, looking for the stuff that was left behind. You don't want to call them maybe the leftovers, left over in the snags and interstices of the bark. But the nuthatch, the white-breasted nuthatch has an interesting call. It sounds like it's saying, yank, 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 yank. You could actually imitate that, and it'll come down. The red-breasted nuthatch is a real cutie, and they go around sounding like they're tooting a little tin horn.
Oh, thank you, Tim, and the 845. Yank, 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 yank. Is that pretty good?
Yeah. Check it out.
Yank,
yank. Go to the tree in the yard and stand upside down and see what happens.
All right. Well, I've done that before. Last email, then we'll take a break, and then we'll go to the phones. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number if you have a question about birds. This one is from Rob in Canaan, New York. Rob says, we have noticed a dearth of red-winged blackbirds this year compared to previous years. Is this true, or are we just looking for them too early? And that's from Rob.
Well, no, you're not looking for them too early. In fact, you may be a little late for looking for them. The big wave of red-winged blackbirds has passed through earlier on. And right now you're going to get the laggards, the late migrants, and perhaps a few of the local over summer residents. But for the most part, red-winged blackbirds are at where they ought to be, down in the cattail marsh and setting up their territories. So if it's at a let's say a non-traditional backyard bird feeder, the boat has sailed.
Oh, okay. Let's take a quick break here, and then we go to the phones. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is our number. If you have a question about birds, 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Birds Today. Richard Guthrie is with us. And to the phones we go. Anne in Fultonham? Is that where you are, Anne?
Fultonham. Yep, south of Cobleskill.
Well, you are on the air. Go ahead.
I have an odd situation, I think. I've lived here for 21 years. And I have a male tufted titmouse who can't possibly be 21 years old. But every morning, the same male tufted titmouse sits in the exact same spot on the clothesline. And I'm sure it's got to be his offspring, but we never see babies, mothers, anything. Just always one male tufted titmouse on that spot. How is that even possible?
Rich.
Well, thanks for that. A tufted titmouse is a bird that is really, in the nesting season, oftentimes will retire to the deeper woods for nesting. They're a familiar backyard feeder bird, especially through the winter, and they will come back to a feeder during the summer months, but their nesting is usually out of sight someplace else. The same thing happens here, except that I don't have a faithful one returning each spring in this, to come to the feeder. He disappears in the spring, and I don't see him until later. And then there may be three or four or five at once as they bring the young ones to the yard. And whether or not it's the same
feeder.
One,
I don't have a
ahead,
feeder, and I assume this must be offspring because I don't think they live 21 years, right?
Oh, you're right about that. The a 10-year-old titmouse would be very old. A 6-year-old titmouse would be old. Usually, they don't live that long. So it's one of the offspring or subsequent generations that have learned from the adults and returned it faithfully as it's been taught.
Okay. Hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. What is the longest lived bird, Rich?
Oh, that's the albatross out in Midway Island that has, I think it's 75 years old or thereabouts, and
wow.
Still laying eggs.
That's a long
time. And hatching
time.
Eggs.
That's
it's an incredible bird has been documented by over the years by colored leg bands that they've put on there and have been able to keep track of this individual. Remarkable.
Yeah.
For most birds out there, a 30-year-old bird is an old bird, but not out of the realm, especially the larger birds. There's seems to be a proportion between the size and the longevity, the larger, the longer. So 30-year-old red-tailed hawks or bald eagle or Canada goose is very, very possible. But most birds, it's less 10 or less.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Amanda in Stillwater. Amanda, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead. You're on.
Thank you. Okay, my question is, every time I hear some ducks fly overhead, I feel like I hear this faint whistling sound, and I'm wondering if that's coming from their wings or if it's some kind of sound they make as they're flying. So I'm really hoping you can help me solve this mystery.
Wow.
Well, good. It actually could be either. But most likely and most often, it's the wings, the wind whistling through the wings that's creating that whistling sound. But a couple of ducks do kind of like snort, a whistling snort when they fly away. And a couple come to mind. The wood duck, for example, whistles as they leave. And the Goldeneye duck is actually one of the nicknames is the whistler for the sounds that they make when they're flying away. But yes, the noisy wings are one of the attributes of many of the different ducks.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Amanda,
well, thank you
for the call. Rich Guthrie, our guest today, 800-348-2551, the number. And Jason is in Red Hook. Jason, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
I was taking a walk on a trail the other day, and I saw a couple of robins and a pair of blue jays, and they seemed to be scooting along up the trail, bush and tree, you know, together, kind of peacefully, almost like they were hanging out. And I was wondering if I was reading too much into that and, you know, like interspecies birds hanging out. And if Rich has seen this in other birds, what do other birds do this too?
Yes, they do. But I'm thinking that your combination there was probably just coincidental. Robins and jays are not... not co-compatible.
Yeah.
Then they are not friends along the trail. But other bird species certainly are. The chickadee, the titmouse, the nuthatches, and downy woodpeckers, and some of the others will congregate in mixed flocks. But jays and robins, not so much. I think it was just the coincidence. They didn't have enough wherewithal to turn around and go behind you. They just kept evading you by going forward. So, yeah, I think it was just a coincidence.
I thought that was odd because jays are very aggressive. So, anyway, thank you.
Okay, anytime.
Thanks a lot for the call, Jason. It's Birds Today. Rich Guthrie is the man. 800-348-2551 is the number. Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan.
Greetings, Ray. Greetings, Rich. My first question. Hi. First question is just a follow-up to some of the earlier emails and call about red-winged blackbird. For the first time, we have a beautiful choir of blackbirds visiting our backyards and feeders. Nearest water is maybe half a mile at a golf course, and based on what I heard earlier, can I hope that they'll stay around? They'll come around a couple times a day for feedings?
It's a good hope, and they might. It seems like a little bit far for them to commute to a bird feeder. So I would think that the tendency will be to drop off, especially as they get busy defending territory and foraging for their young closer to the nest.
Okay, right. Okay, well, I'll keep hoping because I agree with the earlier caller. I think it was the sound is so beautiful. And now chickadees populate our yard, too. There's a behavior of, a mated pair of chickadees trying. I don't know what they're doing. We have a small stump of an old young black elm. It's only about maybe 6 inches diameter. I don't see any nesting material going in. But I see the two of them in and out, following each other in and out of this little, it's almost like they're making a cave, digging into the stump. Any thoughts?
Well, it sounds to me like they've made themselves a nest inside there. You might have missed the furniture moving in, but that's what they do. They nest inside a little hollow in a tree, especially any size. And I bet you they're nesting in there and coming back and forth. And the black-capped chickadee is an early nester, so they might actually have hatched out eggs by now. So good luck with that.
I see no eggs. I see and no nesting material going in, just almost like they're chipping away at the interior wood.
Well, they could still be excavating their nest site then. Either way, it sounds like they're moving in to make house.
It's so nice to watch them. They're amazing. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest today on the show. Always great to have Rich here. The number is 800-348-2551. And we go to Natalie in Stuyvesant. Natalie, you're on.
Oh, hello. And I think I've got to a place for my... Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you dropped out a little bit, Natalie, so it's our fault for waiting so long, but give it a shot.
Okay. Oh. I have some house finches nesting in my front house, my front light, and I don't want to move them because they might be having babies, and I'm wondering when is a good time to move that nest, if at all, this season.
Well, good for you. The house finch is appropriately named. They are a colorful reddish, rosy red color finch for the male, and the female is a plain brown striped sparrow-like bird. Beautiful song, and they do like to nest on porch ornaments, planters, and front yard ornamental shrubbery. A good time to move the nest will be after, at this point, after the young have hatched out. So you'll have to wait a few weeks and then perhaps go for it. A little tidying up might do it. But now would not necessarily be a good time to move it.
Right. Okay. So wait. I just didn't know if I need to, like, wait the whole summer or if, you know, if in, like, June or July or something. We want our light back, but I don't want to displace these birds. So.
Yeah,
I understand. They may be out to produce multiple broods, but as soon as that first brood is gone, they fledge the young out, move in and do it. I have a cardinal nesting on the trellis right outside my door, and I've had birds nest there before. That seems to be a fine attraction. And we're just going to have to get along to get along.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We're coexisting.
Thanks, Natalie.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Rich, do you think that the word gets around among the birds that you are simpatico and that it's a great place to hang out?
I wish it were the case, but it's interesting. I've had so many different birds nesting on my porch itself or roosting overnight. Coming in to roost for the long winter night, they pick a corner of the porch and hang out there. First thing in the morning, they're gone, but it's a trust thing, and I'm glad they're there. I just wish them well. I feel uncomfortable when I go out because I know she's disturbed. As much as I, but she doesn't go, she doesn't panic, and she doesn't fly away far. But I'd be just as happy if she stayed put and stayed with the eggs in the nest and let me go about my business. But she's not to that point yet.
But, I mean, the birds trust you, right? You go out in your backyard, raise your hands, and they come right to your hands like you're some sort of a wizard, right? You've described that before.
Yeah, some do, but the cardinal not so much. They're not into that game.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Rich Guthrie, the wizard, is here. 800-348-2551. Eileen in Saratoga. Eileen.
Hi, good afternoon. I've been trying to identify a bird that came to my bathroom window, very small window, and he stayed most of the day, but he kept flying up from the ground and attacking the window.
No way.
And leaving white streaks of things. And I can't imagine why he was there in the first place.
Well, what you've got there is not uncommon. It's a bird that's defending its territory against a rival. And there is no real rival there. What the bird perceived to be a rival is its own reflection in the glass. And so it's a never-ending, no-win battle that the bird is engaged in. You can help by reducing the reflection by perhaps increasing an interior light by that window glass. Anything that creates a mirror effect will disturb the bird. So what you don't want to do is increase the mirror effect by putting, let's say, a shade or a curtain or something behind the window. But if you could put something in front of the window on the outside, that would help. But again, it's the bird is fooled by its own image. It's not narcissistic. It's just unfortunately fooled. And it's doing its job.
Any identification for the bird? He was gray, like a very light gray with a yellow, very pale yellow chest.
I've
never seen him before.
And Is it ongoing now? It seems.
No. Just the one.
Oh, another time. It was another time.
Yes.
Perhaps it was a bird called a yellowthroat, which would have that appearance with bright yellow throat on it and a brownish gray back to it. But they have a raccoon-like mask over the eyes, a black mask over the eyes that should really stand out. The other possibilities would be perhaps an off-color female cardinal, and or Carolina wren, which is actually reddish brown, but not the yellow may be an effect of lighting. It might appear yellow, but beige color or rust color.
Yeah.
Well, if you can get a picture, that'd be very helpful.
Go ahead, Eileen.
If he ever comes by again, I shall do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eileen.
Okay, thank you.
Rich Guthrie is our guest, 800-348-2551. Sarah is in Medusa. Hello, Sarah.
Hi there. Our question is about phoebes. We've had some phoebes the past 20 or 30 years that nest on our back porch. And we're wondering, we always think that it's the same phoebe coming back. Obviously, it isn't. But is it their children and their children's children, or could it just be other random phoebes that see a nice-looking back porch and show up?
Good question. And there is a good chance that in subsequent years, it's the same adults returning year after year. And then if they don't make it back, then the young of that pair will occupy the site. Young birds come back to where they were born, where they were hatched out. And and so it's more than likely it's all the same progeny, the same lineage. And so it's a fascinating concept that these birds, if it worked for the parents, it will work for the kids. And as long as there's a vacancy, they'll come back and utilize it. Same backyard, same maple tree, same orchard, works well for everyone.
Great. And so how do they decide which kid gets to inherit the nest?
I love it. That's a great question.
Well, it's a foot race
it's
among
legal
the birds.
Advice that, involved there? Or?
Yeah, that's right. They have to split up the estate. That's how it works. Now, Rich, how does it happen?
It's a foot race. When the ones that arrive first are usually the ones that claim the territory. And this is why so many birds are anxious to return north sooner than what seems a good, reasonable decision. And if they make it, they win. If they get up here too early and the weather turns really sour on them, well, the hand-me-down goes to the next one up. So.
No, there you go.
Uh-huh.
Well, Sarah,
like, would they go around the corner?
Yeah,
like,
go somewhere nearby.
Sibling who didn't get the... Yeah. And one more phoebe question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
This is so helpful. When last year they fledged in mid to late June, do you think that any time after that, build it, and as long as we rebuild it so there's a little niche for them again?
I missed some of the question, but I think you were asking if it's okay to remove the nest after they've fledged out. Is that it?
Yeah, and then rebuild it after we rebuild the back porch.
Oh, yes. They'll be fine. If you're going to do some work on the back porch after they've fledged, they'll be back next year looking around. And if it hasn't been modified beyond their wishes, you know, more than they can handle, they'll be back. They'll be fine. I think if not, they'll find a nearby place and work with that. So.
All right. Sarah, thanks a lot. Let's grab one more, Rich, before we hit a break, and then we'll come back for the home stretch. 800-348-2551 is our number, and we go to Chris in Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, Mr. Gordon, three questions. I noticed some hawks flying over my garage last night, and the second question, can eagles fly high? And the last question, do seagulls make noises?
That's a lot. It's a lot to unpack, Chris. All right, Rich, you get all that?
I got the second two, and I'll go after them first.
All right.
Yes, eagles can fly high, but not higher than they need to. They're not looking to set any records. They're looking to see what suits the purpose for the moment. And if flying high does it, like migrating or getting around further, that's fine. The seagulls, yeah, they can be quite noisy. And down by the seashore, if they find food, somehow find it advantageous to let everybody know. And while we like to call them seagulls, I have no problem with that because that's how we recognize this group of birds. Many of them have no real affinity to the sea. Some of them are well inland birds. Yep. And you might call them lake gulls or the like. And I won't go into the bagel gull story.
Okay.
But
and what was the first part of that rather lengthy question, Chris? Then we have
I kind of missed that.
I saw some blackbirds flying over my garage last night, and I was just wondering what kind of birds are they?
Oh, boy, at night, eh?
Oh, it could be a mix of any of a variety of blackbirds that are returning, and usually it's the grackles and red-winged blackbirds and perhaps some cowbirds mixed in with them. So, and then towards dusk, they like to go to a communal roost, and so you might be seeing a flock of them going from their foods area to their rest area. So they're just commuting back and forth. And pretty soon they'll disperse and take up territory in their own nesting grounds.
Richard P. Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is a telephone number. It's birds. And there are more birds to discuss. And we'll do that on the other side of the break. Vox Pop, it's birds today. Rich Guthrie is here, and the number is 800-348-2551. We have so many email messages, Rich, and so many callers that I will only do one email here. And, you know, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
It's easy. The name is RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
Richard.
Easy pickings.
Richard P. Guthrie, and Guthrie is spelled...
G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
All right, RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. If your email question is not read, and there are about 20 of them that won't be read, feel free to email Rich, and as time permits, maybe he'll get back to you. This one is from Jill in the Hudson Valley. Jill writes, "It's that time of year again. In light of the new popularity in bird watching, could you please take a minute to explain birding etiquette? I'm a seasoned birder, and I was dismayed last year when I watched people desperately trying to get photos of golden-winged warblers going off trail and trampling areas that might have been the birds' nesting areas. Can you please explain a few do's and don'ts of birding?"
Well, that's a very important don't. Nesting season is a critical period for birds. This is when they replenish their species, and you know they take a heavy toll in migration and overwintering, so reproducing, getting the young out, is critically important for them. And any disturbance of a nesting site is really on the do not do list. There is a good site to check out, the American Birding Association, aba.org. American Birding Association has a good list of protocols and ethical behaviors to follow, rules that would apply specifically to things like that, especially to photographing birds up close and affecting the nestings. Very good question, and it's something that is a great concern.
All right. And that's ABA dot what?
ORG. It's American Birding Association.
Okay. You know, when I was a kid, the ABA was the American Basketball Association.
Well, there you go. You might end up finding out who's doing the hoops.
And the New York Nets played down at the Nassau Coliseum, and Dr. J and Rick. Remember those days, Rich? Remember those?
Good old days.
Yeah. We go now to Jake in Cheshire, Massachusetts. Jake.
Hey, how you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
You
appreciate
bet.
It. Hey, quick question for you. We just put up a bird feeder in our backyard. We haven't had a bird feeder in there. It's got to be 5 years or so. How do we get birds to actually come to it?
Well, you got to fill them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's filled.
And then it's a matter of waiting.
We put a little seed on the so how long do you wait? Because we put some seed on the ground, and we're hoping to attract some birds just to kind of to watch them. We enjoy looking at them.
It's just you really, it doesn't matter where you put the seed. If you put it on the ground or up in the feeder itself, the birds themselves are constantly exploring new sources, and you'll have to wait for one of them to discover it. And then, as Ray suggested earlier, the word gets out there, and they're watching each other for the opportunity to see if they can horn in on a good deal. And if you got it, they'll come. So be patient. Keep it going. Water in a backyard is an important element. If you can somehow put a tray or a bird bath or some sort of a saucer out there that birds can come to for a quick drink, a quick bath, and a place to congregate.
Okay.
All right. Will do. I appreciate it. Thanks for your answer.
Thanks, Jake. You know, you mentioned keeping the bird feeders away from possible bears, but what about bird baths? I mean, will a bear come up and take a couple of sips? Is that a bad thing to have?
Not at all. I don't think so. I don't think it's not the water that the bears are after so much. I don't believe it's the easy food.
Right.
They, for the most part, will have their water source out there someplace. And if that does become an issue, you'll know it. They'll knock it over, and you just want to be aware of that. But I don't think that's something that. And I'll stand corrected if that's if one of my former colleagues will I'll check with them about that. But I wouldn't worry about that.
We'll follow up on the next show if you and I remember in our old age here. Estelle in Clifton Park. Estelle, you're on.
Thank you. I was wondering if there's anything that can be done to prevent or deter woodpeckers from looking for bugs on a wood-sided house.
If the bugs are there, the woodpeckers can discover it somehow. They have an uncanny ability to find food. And that's what the issue is. So I would be more concerned about whatever the food source is than the woodpeckers. The woodpeckers are more or less the surgeon taking out the problem. But they will not cure the source of the problem. So I'd work on that to see. Other than that, sometimes woodpeckers will use house siding as a drumming board to proclaim their territory. They do that with hollow logs on trees and the like. But that doesn't seem to sound like the case. So,
no, they've done a tremendous amount of damage, not just to my home, but we have other homes in the area that also have wood siding, and it seems to be a big problem.
Oh, boy.
It sounds like a problem, but it's not something you can blame the woodpeckers for. They're just working on an opportunity. It's like you have a huge bird feeder out there, and you're offering wood gnawing insects as a food source. So I would look to see about that and proceed with that approach.
Estelle, thank you very much for the call. We go to Amsterdam. Tom, you're on. Oh, Tom, are you there? Tom is gone. All right, Tom, you waited 24 minutes and then you hung up.
Let me interject this, if I can, Ray.
Okay.
And that is in person on Saturday with the Green Land Trust. I'll be doing a walk at the Willows near Athens, New York.
Ooh.
And that's to assist the Green Land Trust with a little bit of outreach for them.
Oh, that's
it's
great.
greenlandtrust.org, and this green has an extra E.
Ah.
Not like the icy rock that's not for sale.
Right. No, I got all right, that's green with an extra E at the end. And this is great because this tells us that people are getting out there and doing stuff again, and this is a positive sign, Rich Guthrie.
No question about it. And just this morning, I'm receiving reports of folks who have gone out to, in this case, Five Rivers Environmental Education Center near Delmar.
Yeah.
And I've found 50 different species of birds while they're out and about. The warblers, the orioles, the grosbeaks, the buntings, And the same thing for other bird areas around. So now's a perfect time to get out on your own with the family or link up with one of the local bird clubs for their early season bird walks.
Tremendous.
A perfect time to get out and enjoy this wonderful weather we today brings us.
Rich Guthrie is our guest, and I think we have Tom in Amsterdam back. Hello, Tom. Are you there now?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Sorry about that.
No sweat.
I had a quick comment about crows, and then I have a question about turkey vultures.
Okay.
And my comment about crows is that you had suggested to just keep banging away on the pans, and eventually they would go away, and I had success with that.
Oh, great.
And my question about turkey vultures is, in Amsterdam, we have quite a few, and they come and go. But for the last couple of weeks, there's been a small group of like 15 or 20 that circle in my area, and they've been getting closer and closer to my block. And then the last couple of days, they've been flying right over the house,
uh-oh,
like below the tree line. And I just wonder how they operate. Are they, I mean, do they know something's dying, or does it take them that long to find it, or what's the deal?
Hey, man, if they're hovering over your house, I'd start worrying. But, Rich, maybe that's an overreaction. Go ahead.
No, it sounds to me like it's a roost site, which is essentially harmless. Turkey vultures are communal roosters, and they will those that are not paired off and nesting in their solitary way are the ones that are not inclined to nest this year, the young or unattached. And they will gather together each evening for an evening roost, spend the evening, and then in the daytime fan out to the countryside. So it's not an ominous sign. In fact, I love to watch the turkey vultures coming in to roost at a nearby area here. And they're so graceful as they're gliding in. Wonderful, quiet birds as they gently just settle into their evening roost.
All right, so Tom doesn't need to get his affairs in order, basically. He's okay.
None of my neighbors are dying.
All right.
Eat well, stay healthy, be good.
All right, thanks, Tom. We appreciate the call. Let's go over to Margaret in Washington, Massachusetts. Hello there, Margaret.
Hi there.
You're on.
So I have a recording of something I recorded in my front yard in November.
Ooh.
That was a call that I've never heard before or since, and it's a really protracted single note call. And I didn't know if I played it, if it would go through.
Go for it.
I've got it on my cell phone. I'm calling you from my land.
Okay? I love it. Go for it.
Great. Let's try it 1 second.
It's exciting. Doesn't sound too good, Margaret. That's not too good.
I'm not hearing it.
No, it sounds like the beginning of an old Paul Whiteman Orchestra album from 1921. We're not hearing it. No, why don't you imitate it for us?
Oh, I couldn't possibly.
Oh, come on, try.
No, it's just this really high-pitched single squeak. You know, like when you hear a hawk or something overhead.
Yeah.
They're soaring.
Yeah.
There's often just that single, long, protracted note. So that's what it was, but it was in a tree. And it was low down, and I could never. It went on for like 20 minutes or more. That's why I finally decided to record it. And I never saw him take off. I never saw who it was because it changed position once, and I didn't catch when it flew.
Well, Margaret, I'll tell you what. Before Rich, you might have an answer, but why don't you email us at voxpop@wamc.org? We usually don't like attachments, but I know who you are, and if you attach that, we'll try to have our engineers clean it up for the next show.
Okay, great.
All right, now anyway, Rich, go ahead.
I'd love to tackle that one.
Go ahead, but do you have an idea, Rich?
An idea? I like the sound, a suggestion that it may be a hawk. A young hawk especially, that may be persistently demanding for food, but we'll wait and see. I like that idea, Ray.
All right, Margaret, hey, thanks a lot and good try on that one. Roger in Warwick, hello there, Roger.
Hey there. Good to hear you guys. You're a wonderful show.
Oh, thanks.
It's a question I think was probably already answered in some of the other callers, but I'll give it to you anyhow. I have a small pond on our property, and it's really not big at all. It has a little dam at the end of it. And every year at the end of February, beginning of March, we have two mallards, male and female. I'm not a bird expert, but I'm pretty sure they're mallards.
Okay.
And they're two sexes. And they come. They have little chicks, oh, about six or thereabouts. They paddle around on the pond, and then they leave. And every year, it's the two mallards come back, same time of the year. They don't have other birds that one time another set of birds came in, and they kind of kicked them out. They didn't like to share it at all.
Oh.
And no other mallards. They don't, if their kids are born there, they don't come back. It's just these two. So you said earlier, maybe it's the first time to get there, and the ones who were born there, they come back. Is that all it is?
Yeah, that's probably the case. And mallards are one of those longer longevity bird species. So it could very well be the same mom and pop returning each year. And they know where to go. They know where to find it, and they win. Adult birds tend to be the ones who make it through and persist. The young ones will have to find their own place if they arrive and it's already taken. They may be the ones that are booted out when they show up, and it happens so quickly that you may not be there to watch it.
That's great. So mallards have a good longevity. What would you estimate that to be? 10 years as much?
Could even be longer.
Wow.
Could even be longer.
Really?
With some of the waterfowl species, their longevity can be up to 25 years or even perhaps more.
Oh, my God.
I'll have to look that up.
In birds.
Yeah.
We should have named them and trained them.
Well, feel free.
Taught them different languages.
Yeah.
Just Donald and Daisy will work.
All right, Roger. Hey, thanks a lot. We got to move it along here, and we go to Irene in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Irene, you're on.
Hello. On Easter Sunday, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I had several hundred red-winged blackbirds in the backyard, high in the trees, and a yellow-headed blackbird that you could see without your... Now, how rare is that?
Very, very, very rare.
Really?
Is that only three rares? Yeah, maybe one more.
Wow.
So go for it. And if you know eBird, I would urge you to enter that onto eBird.org because people want to know. It's a Cornell University website, and it's free. It's open to the public. You can put and you can take tremendous amount of information in there. They love to hear about these things.
I'm not doubting the veracity of Irene's account here, but what kind of proof? I mean, wouldn't eBird need some sort of...
Oh, people had pictures.
Ah, okay.
People had pictures, and it was very exciting. So we went out for a walk in honor of our friend who had just died, and when we came out of the woods, there was all these people looking at the blackbirds, and we were really honored.
That is so
cool. It
was
a good end to the day.
Excellent news. That's very nice. And the yellow-headed blackbird is one of the most appropriately aptly named bird species out there. It's a black bird with a lemon-yellow head. They stand out. Good
for you. Very interesting indeed. Well, Irene, thank you very much. You'll be the last one today. Rich Guthrie, if people want to get in touch with you about birds and buds and other things, how do they do that?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. And I even see you on Saturday morning at the Greenland Trust.
Hey, Rich, beautiful job, sir. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you real soon, okay?
Excellent, Ray. Thank you.
Thank you. Support comes from Mother Earth Storehouse, open 7 days, working to help keep communities safe and supplied with EDC goods and services, serving the Hudson Valley with organic and all-natural foods since 1978, MotherEarthStorehouse.com, and Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, interimhealthcare.com. Once again, a big thanks to Rich Guthrie for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Once again, I apologize to all those dozens who couldn't get through today. And, you know, I said at the beginning of the show, it's like a Beatles concert. And Rich really is, he kind of reminds me of late-era Ringo. But he's definitely one of the Beatles, and it's a popular show. But Rich will be back next month, and we'll do it again. And maybe you get your question a little earlier, and you get on the air. Now, tomorrow, oh, man. Well, I'll let you know about that in a minute. First, thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Jordan Yoxall for answering the phones. Thanks to our producer, Jackie Orchard. Thanks to me for hosting the show. And I think I did a B-minus on this one, right, Zach? No? C? All right, fair enough. Tomorrow it's gardening. And who could fail at that? Well, we'll find out. See you tomorrow at 2:00.